right, we'll, now that we're all seated, we'll call the meeting to order, and this is our monthly committee of the whole meeting. Start off with, I guess, property and services this evening. Mr. Ramsey.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have two action items for next Monday night, and we do not have any information items, so hopefully my report's pretty short. The first item is the approval of the food vendor agreements for 2012-13. As you recall, it was two or three years ago, we ventured into having the district run the concession stands and sharing in the profits with the booster clubs. As part of that, we allow two vendors, Friend to sell French fries, Nice Size Fries, and Lickety Split to sell ice cream. Part of that agreement was we take 20% of the profits. So they've been, since inception, they've been our vendor that has signed the agreements. So we'd like to continue that again this year. 1.2, approval to commit $3.2 million of the general fund balance for the purpose of future PISRS obligations. We've just finished our year-end audit, and we have a preliminary fund balance, addition to the fund balance, if you will. As you know, back during the budget stage, we were estimating at a minimum of $700,000 to be added. Majority of that was the additional funds from the state that we received from the governor's budget till the final budget that was passed in 11-12. And the remainder, about $300,000, was from additional revenues or funds that we didn't expend. I'm happy to report that we have about a little over $1.3 million that's going to fall to the bottom line. Just to clarify the increase from $700,000 to the $1.3 million, the earned income tax revenues came in about $320,000 higher than the Tax Bureau projected. They projected that we would have about a little over $2.5 million. It came in over $2.8 million. In talking with them, just to kind of get clarification, this has really taken a lot of the districts by surprise, and we've had some conversations. One of the unique things that happened this year, it's kind of the transition year, where we are still getting some estimated payments for 2010 calendar or tax year, which will be 2011, which will be reconciled in our November distribution. In addition, we're starting to get actual payments for the 2012 tax year. Next year, we will just be getting actual payments. We will not be getting the estimated payments. The concern that all of us have is with the estimates, are we going to owe considerable money back in November when we got the estimated payments this year? The executive director of the Tax Bureau is pretty optimistic that we won't have to owe anything back, but he still is standing pretty firm that he anticipates still a drop in cash flow when we just convert over to the actual, don't have the combination thereof. So it's somewhat good news. The concern still is it's unpredictable. So we have budgeted $2.3 million for 12-13. And as I reported earlier, they were anticipating like a 30% drop. They don't think it's going to be as much, so we're hopeful that we'll have some money left over in that line item again this coming year. The other item that came in higher than anticipated was the tuitions that we charged to other districts. As you know, we estimate based on the projected number of students that we have, and then at year end, we reconcile to actual based on actual day's membership, if you will. In addition, when we do our year-end billings, we bill for other support services, which are not included in the regular tuition contracts, the per-student amount. This is for things like, school psych. This is for, could be nursing services. It could be occupational therapy service. Could be for physical therapy services. So those things we do bill at year-end to reconcile for those students. These costs came in, or these revenues came in almost $200,000 higher than we anticipated, which is a good news. The and CARE and their department are doing a great job, especially tracking those additional services that go to help offset some of our costs on the expense side. So when you add those two together, it's about $500,000, which gets you pretty close to where we are above the $700,000 that we originally projected. What I'd like to do, knowing that we can only have 8% of our budgeted costs in a fund balance, in an unassigned fund balance, which would that would take us up to about $3.5 million in an unassigned balance. I'd like to take the balance and I'd like to earmark it or commit it and add it to our PESRS commitment. And I'll show you the chart that I that was included in the agenda. And if you can click on that attachment, I appreciate it. The reason I'd like to do this as well is that, as you know, keeping it in the general fund, we can uncommit it just as easily as you commit it. But if you take a look at the PESRS drawdown chart, the first set of blocks is the total gross rate projected and budgeted. This is what we were budgeting back towards the end of our budget season. If you scroll down to the next set of blocks, the green blocks, this is the net rate, which would be the state shares. We pay 50% of the rate for our expenditures for PESRS. So you see the projected, and then you see the budget, how we like to phase that in. And if you scroll down to the bottom, you can see in this right here, the $3.2 million is what I'm proposing. And with a 1.7 salary increase in all future years in the total payroll, we're still about $250,000 short to be able to phase in based on what we originally were thinking. What that would mean is we would have to increase, change our projection assumptions, and we may have to phase in a little bit more or a little bit less and increase the rate on the expenditure side. Or, depending on what happens this year, put another $250,000 into committed funds. Again, we're just kind of delaying. If you take a look at the projected costs, which is the net rates as projected by PESRS, and what we're budgeting, you can see how much of the reserve or fund commitments that we're going to use in those years to help offset the or phase in the rate and not have to impact on the taxpayers. When you take a look at, when you think about our milli, our value of one mil, which is, you know, just over $1.9 million, almost $2 million, you know, you're looking at some considerable millage rates if we were to raise taxes based on the on that difference there of what we're using some of our non-reoccurring savings, if you will. One of the other things we could do is we could transfer it to Capital Reserve Fund, but there's you're pretty limited in what you're able to do there. As you know, we're going to use about a little over $3 million for the Brecknock project. I'd also like to propose that Mr. Walsh and I, during this budget season, we'll sit down and take a look at about 15 years out and see what type of maintenance, large maintenance items that we may have, and develop a capital reserve plan, funding plan, if you will. That way, in the future, if we have some excess funds left over and we have the PESRS thing taken care of, we could dump some money over in the Capital Reserve Fund to help offset some of those future projects. So if and when they happen, we're not going back to the taxpayers and or doing bond issues. So I'm trying to look out there about 15 years. Any questions on that at all, or comments, or changes of plans or philosophies?
So just looking at these bottom set of numbers here as far as the amount budgeted and then the difference, is that number getting lower just because of the aid retirement predictions?
Is which number getting lower?
The difference?
No.
Or is that getting lower because we're going to be contributing more?
Yeah, it's actually the difference when you mean the negative in the difference column. That's actually lower when you compare to what we should be paying into PESRs compared to what we're budgeting in our expense side. That is usage of that fund balance. So we're using, so for example, in 12-13, the budget that we just adopted, our revenues were less than our expenditures by $226,000 because we're going to use a portion of our committed fund balance for PESRs to help offset or fund the additional from the 938 to the 1.1 million. One of the concerns that we do have, and as the governor kind of announced they were going to fix this over the summer, nothing has happened. As more and more people are retiring from districts, and districts are not replacing them, you know, that in essence is decreasing a share of the contribution side from employees. So there's some concern of what's going to happen in future years. I know when we looked at early on in the budget, you know, I know the rates were lower when they came out. They were a little bit higher based on predictions, and these rates are based on a 7.5% return on the PESRs actuarial assumption. So that's, you know, there's not many of those out there. So, but then again, they can invest in things that we can't. So.
So then, year 2018-19, the PESR funds that we had presently goes to zero, essentially. -$30,000.
The committed, yes.
Right, if we make this contribution.
Yes, and if we phase in the increase as it's presented.
Well, I would like to compliment you on the strength of the district. Good financial management. Obviously, that's good. Thank
you. Any other questions or comments?
Are they going to have those revenue side tighter next year? Revenue side, is it going to be a little tighter for us? I like to have dropout when we save money, but to have dropout because they had messed up or there was a change in the revenue side like that, that kind of doesn't help us in the budgeting side. I mean, dropout should be from the savings and from the...
Right. When you look at our expenditure side, I mean, we came pretty close to our expenditure side. A lot of this is on the revenue side. Well, basically all of it's on the revenue side. And that's something I know we have a meeting on Wednesday at the Tax Bureau to really talk about, you know, what their projections are for us going forward and if it can be a little bit more accurate type of thing. So, you know, we're pretty good on our budgeting side. But definitely the wild card, too, is, you know, how many students we entrepreneurial efforts seem to be increasing as well. I mean, when we look at where we budgeted this year versus where our students are, it seems like we have each day more and more districts want to send students into our special education classes. So that it's a good thing, but when you look at the year end, it's higher than you anticipate. So
I want to make sure that's clear and underscore, especially for you, Pat. You know, the expenditures was budgeted almost right on the money. And we've got to count on outside agencies to do their job so that we can do our job, John.
Right.
You know, the error, if there was an error, wasn't here. The other piece of that we're talking about with special education, you know, oftentimes we apply for and hope it sticks kind of thing with getting portions of people reimbursed for services, and you never know ahead of time what they're going to take or not take. And to credit Nadine and the folks who work with her, they keep trying. They keep knocking on the doors, and that brought in a couple $100,000 because of effort. And so, you know, those things you can't budget on. You can't count on those things. So, I think I'm sound defensive, maybe because I am. I think the team did a great job, and we fell to the positive. So it's really all good.
Yeah, and I apologize. I wasn't referring. I'm more referring to the Tax Bureau because that seems to me what I'm concerned about is that. That money that was excess this year was in last year's budget. Now that we're going to give that back in the future year if we should. So we're going to get caught. We're getting caught this year with extra, and then we're The part that special ed, I'm fine with that, but it's tax bureau problem. That should have been a little bit more flowed through there. Yeah. I just got the sense we're caught next budget year with some of that.
And there's no guarantee that, I mean, as I said previously, I mean, I don't think there's going to be a big take back, if you will, in 12-13. One of the things that I've realized with our executive director, he's pretty conservative in what he's throwing out. The other thing is, too, and like I said, we'll hear more about it on Wednesday, and I can report on Monday, but I know with our systems getting in sooner and their outreach to the employers and the accounting firms, I think has really helped to increase the efficiency of getting dollars to us sooner. But again, we'll hear more about it. As to the tuition to other districts, unless we add more classes, I think we're pretty much with the current classes that we did and we added this year, I think we're pretty much at capacity. So I wouldn't see too much of an increase there. But so hopefully we can get that a little bit closer.
I have a question about the $185,000. Like you said, that was for billing the other school districts for things like occupational therapy, nursing services. But didn't we do a contract that we have to pay per hour for those things? Or is that taken out, like balanced out the $185,000 in addition or subtracting out the extra hours we would have had to pay for those services? Or
yeah,
do we pay for them whether we have the extra students or not?
Right. We have... The $185,000 incorporated, it's not all associated with the other services. A lot of that accounts for additional students that were added throughout the year when we did the reconciliation. But the occupational therapy, we have our own individual on staff. We do contract for a portion of that, which would be on the expense side. And then on this side, we're getting the revenue from these schools to help offset that cost. So
I guess my other question was, I know you had said at one point, Dr. Hollister, that we're not trying to milk the other school districts and make a huge profit on them. I'd say I don't want to be more at risk because we're helping them out, but, you know, are we overbilling? Again, not that I don't want to make money and have increased revenue, but are we taking advantage of the other school districts?
No, it's actually the actual cost that we are paying for those services and the actual cost of the class is what we are billing those districts for. You know, we're making a small percentage on each student, but not, as Dr. Oster can say, they're getting a great deal as compared to what they would be paying if they were looking at the IU. I mean, some of our classes are well below 50% of what it will cost at the IU or for other services.
And keep in mind, we're rounding out rosters by bringing kids in. We're not adding. You know, we need all those personnel there, whether there's three kids in the room or eight. And as far as the application for services, that comes from others. That's not even coming from school district funds. That's other access services that we can tap into. That's where some of that money comes from. So I think it's a win-win. It really, truly is.
So really, we're keeping the cost of education down
for everybody. And I got to tell you, the first day of school, I was out in New Holland, and I was proud to see three different school district buses parked in New Holland. It's pretty cool.
You know, so. Yeah, in essence, you know, as we've said before, I mean, we, all but a couple of the severely needy kids in Peckham Valley and their learning support, we have all their other students. So not only are we making money to help our costs stay down, they also have saved huge dollars by bringing kids back and bringing them here. So,
on the capital reserve fund, you say we designate money to go in here if for some reason we need to transfer it over at a later date to the capital reserve fund. Can we do that?
Yes, you can. You're not allowed to exceed your expenditure budget, but that does not include fund transfers to other funds. So if in a year we wanted to move some of that money over from our fund balance or committed, you could actually overexpend your budget because you're allowed to for fund transfers.
Yeah. Where will our balance be after we take that money out for recognition from the capital reserve?
You know, I can get that for you in a second.
And that would obviously be when you and Neil, you know, go over that looking forward. You know, we're not anticipating any major renovations, but that's going to be the, you know, we're going to have to replace the, these systems or these roofs or whatever. But so, yeah, I think that's a good idea. And I think we need to kind of make have that match, you know, the amount that's in there.
Yeah, I think when Neil and I first were going through some things, and we can detail these out for you, I think you were looking at about $6 million to have in a, set aside in a capital reserve fund for over the next 15 years, if I'm correct on that. And like I said, we can detail that for you, but that's going to mean that we'll have to put some money into that fund going forward, and hopefully we can achieve some savings or get some additional revenue to help offset that. Let me just look here. Yeah, Stan.
There we go.
Just
put
2 more cents in the capital.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me just, I can let you know here.
That's fine. I mean,
we got about, we have about just over $6 million in there. So once we tap into that for about a little over three, we'll probably have, you know, about half, about $3 million left.
Yeah.
So we have to try to get somewhere, squirrel away another $3 million or so
that
to get us through the next 15.
I mean, at that point, that sounds appropriate to me. I mean, we don't want to tap it all together down to bare bones, but obviously the money is crucially needed in the Peasers piece of it. So.
And keep in mind, as Keith says, if somehow the General Assembly does fix this problem,
yeah,
help us fix it, that money is still our, still play with that money.
It's just
stuck.
It's just basically designated for that at this point. So. Any other questions?
Question I have is for the food vendors. For next week, can we get what they did pay last year and the rest of the season?
Which food vendors?
The fries and the...
With the total between the two was about $1,000. That day that we got on their revenue, the 20%, and as you know, the ice cream we split that with the cheerleader club, because the concession stand itself, you know, that goes to the, you know, like whether it's the soccer or the football, goes to those boosters. We give according to our initial agreement, 90% of that revenue for the ice cream goes to cheerleaders, and 10% comes to us. The French fries, the band boosters walked away from it. They chose not to share in that, so we get 100% of that profit. So of the 1,000, we get about 600, and the cheerleaders get about 400.
I know last year there was a little, I don't want to say controversy, but there was a little play going on between the different sports groups and things about, especially football, having to give up the pretty happy to have the agreement.
Yeah, I think I haven't heard anything from either party. We actually met with some representative of the football boosters, Mr. Walsh, myself, and Phyllis. And there was a couple things they wanted to add. I know Phyllis, there was a couple things that she did to help improve the process. And I think it's just getting better each time by reaching out. So.
I was at the first game, and they both seemed to be doing a pretty brisk business. So it was a hot night, so the ice cream was cool.
Yeah, that ends my report.
All right. Any other questions then for the overall property and services? All right. Thank you. And program committee.
The program committee has one action item this week and one information item. The action item is for approval of affidavit of guardianship applications for 2012-13 school year. You have a copy of the affidavits, the names and addresses. It's on the agenda manager, and you can print out a hard copy if you need it. Any questions about the approval? And our information item pertains to the 2012 PSSA assessment. We have the final scores for AYP results, and they came this week. And if you just upload it right now, you also have this on your agenda manager. At the district level, we made AYP in math and reading. You can see there that we did not make AYP in math and reading in our 9 through 12 grade span. In order for the district to make AYP, one of those three grade spans has to make AYP. So two of our three grade spans made AYP, so the district makes AYP in performance. If you want to go up a little bit, in the district attendance rate, our district attendance rate was 96.15%. We needed it to be 90% or better, so the district made AYP for attendance. The district graduation rate, we did not make AYP at the district level for our graduation rate. If you look, all our students made the graduation rate of 85% or were improving. We made 92.28%. Our white non-Hispanic, which is our biggest population group that is counted towards AYP, was at 93.19%. But our economically disadvantaged students were at 82%. And we did not make AYP for those students. So the district is in mourning for our graduation rate. Last time we were in mourning was in 2002 for special ed performance in reading. So we will be focusing on what we need to do to increase our graduation rate. There is a packet, in addition, a sheet that tells you, that we can look at as well, that tells you what the district will be focusing on. We are spending a lot of time looking at how we meet the needs of our students that come from economically disadvantaged households. For the most part, the graduation rate, which is affected by the number of students that graduate plus the number of students that drop out, our dropout rate rose for, it was actually the 10-11 school year, our dropout rate rose, and that's what they're looking at with our graduation rate. Most of those students were economically disadvantaged. So we do have two social workers. The focus for them is to be working mostly with our economically disadvantaged families to connect them to outside agencies and such within the county, and our ESSN, the new social services network that Elanco has. They work very closely with those families to help them meet the needs of the students that are most, that affect them educationally. That's their focus more than a social worker from an agency that would be working on a specific other family issues. They look specifically at how they can help the families meet the needs of their children so that they can get to school and do their homework and be the best that they can be. If you move down, well, you can see, not quite that far, sorry. If you look, Brecknock made AYP in both mathematics and reading performance. There are many different ways to make AYP. There's like six or seven different ways to make AYP, but they did make AYP in Brecknock. We also made AYP at Blue Ball, and we made AYP at New Holland. And we made AYP at the middle school. One of the things that is very evident at the middle school is that the change in schedule last year, which we are continuing this year, which is a focus of that we're looking at to help meet the needs, that change in schedule that allows for our students that are below basic and basic to receive a concentrated 90-minute block of instruction has really paid off, and we saw nice improvements in across the board in our special education population that had the more intense instructional time. The same way at the high school, even though the high school had performance issues, the special education population scored better than they were projected to score based on that additional time. So the scheduling at the middle school and the scheduling at the high school with the co-taught classes is starting to show a lot of promise. And you want to go up? Our last is Garden Spot High School. This is where the Garden Spot High School did not make AYP for the performance in math or performance in reading. It also did not make AYP in reading for the economically disadvantaged, and like we spoke before, they did not make AYP in graduation rate for economically disadvantaged. Some of the things, do you have any questions about the information I just shared?
Will that goal go up again next year, the percentage?
Yes, the goal percentage will go up next year. It will be, 92% with reading and 87% with math, and the year after that, this year, and the year after that, unless things change, it's 100%.
I have a question. You said this was 10-11, so it was really the year before our online program was up and running?
For graduation rate, yes.
So do you think that, I mean, you know who these kids are. Do you think that is an avenue that might help them? Or are there other, is the stuff in place, if we can just get them to it, that
yes,
can improve that?
I believe so. We've spent, one of our focuses is technology. And so there are things that we've put in place at the high school level, such as Elenco Online. We also have a senior option. We have a lot more. We do the Anytime Anywhere Learning, which is 7th, 8th, and 9th this year, and moving forward, going past that, which allows us to personalize education, allows us to take students from where they are and move them. It's very, the students, now we've only had it out a couple weeks, but they seem to be very motivated by having the computer right there. We've also, at the elementary level, as you know, you approved Reading Street, which is a new reading or language arts program at the elementary, which has a technology component, online reading. They've started that. This is only the second week, but once again, the students are very motivated to be on the computer and doing things. So I believe our focus on integrating technology in the classroom to make it a seamless piece of our instruction is going to help a whole lot in helping to motivate and move students. And I believe the economically disadvantaged will benefit from that as well.
Do we know where other schools in the county are at?
Other school districts in the county are right where we are. In fact, I can mention Warwick is identical to us. They have the exact same issue going on.
And next year, everybody in the county is going to
It's going to be harder to.
Right. Because, raising the bar.
Yeah, keep in mind that two things. The bar is raised and the difficulty of the test is also raised. It's two things moving simultaneously. Since 2002, the last time the district had a concern, the test, the rigor of the test has gone up, and the bar has gone up simultaneously. So it sounds strange to say, but our kids are actually probably more academically successful than ever before. But the measures are outrunning their performance. Having said that, that's not acceptable, especially the graduation rate. We can do something about that, and we will.
Yeah.
That's not okay. It's just plain not okay. So there are a number of things happening in the district. Our administrators and our teachers are recognizing this issue. Last month, I talked about how kindergarten teachers reached out to New Holland. They went out to families and welcomed them to school and brought them books before they even started school, sort of as an outreach program. There's a group of teachers at the high school doing a book study on a book about what it's like to grow up in poverty. So, there's enough people who recognize the issue that we're doing some things about it. Same thing at the middle school, and that's mentioned in the information that you have. So, we know it's a real problem, and it's one that we can fix, and we will.
If the scheduling at the middle school mirrors the scheduling at the high school, there's such good results at the middle school, what's the theory that it's not replicating itself?
It's not that at this point, it's the very lowest students at the high school that are getting that 80-minute block or 80-minute year-long block, whereas the other classes at the high school are semester classes. What they've done at the high school to make to provide some more additional time is they've changed what used to be the flex period at the end of the day. They have now made iSpartan time, which is the middle of the day. It's a longer period of time, and they're being very purposeful. We've changed our universal screenings so we can more quickly identify students that are going to need additional support. And we're being very specific when we meet with them to work on skill needs that they have. Once again, we have the computers in the classroom that we're implementing online programs that allow the students to pre-test, and then it helps to, it's called branching. It moves the students into the areas where they need support at the appropriate level. Not only does it move backwards if it needs to, but if the students need to be more advanced, it moves forward on that as well, because that's one of the areas we need to be looking at as well. We need to keep our advanced students growing. And so we've added additional time with the schedule change this year at the high school. I should have been a little more clear on that.
But I think to Mr. Jones' comment, that the schedules are very different in the middle school versus the high school. Mm-hmm. The high school is a block scheduling, mm-hmm. and the middle school is not.
With that change of the iSpartan time to the middle of the day, the kids who don't need the focused and in-depth work, do you anticipate, or do you are finding that they're having a hard time, kids that have this free time, refocusing then if they've got this block of free time in the middle of the day to get back engaged?
We haven't heard that yet. It's still fairly new, but keep in mind too that the students who don't need the remediation are receiving and participating in enrichment activities, so it's not like they're free for
right.
a period or not doing anything.
Right.
For example, I spoke to Neil Weidman, Mr. Weidman, 2 weeks ago, and he's running a special a leadership seminar with kids, and they're going to try and embrace some kind of community project and come up with solutions. That's awesome stuff. And I push Neil into the international. You know, don't think just community, let's think of something big. So you know, we had that conversation. So there's those kinds of things going on. I think the other thing that we have to readily admit is that some of the issues that the high school is having is multidimensional. There's a lot of different threads that kind of come together and I think are being addressed now. But it's going to take a little time for some of those things to take place and to get seen.
One of the major pushes at the high school is positive community building within the building itself. And their early dismissal times this year are being spent with Tom Stetcher from Westchester, and he's bringing to the building positive team building program that is being used with the teachers and the paraprofessionals, and is just really trying to turn the culture around and make it real strong and positive. And so far, it's been very well received, even by our students. We have a leadership team that was picked at the high school, focusing on those students that would have maybe fallen into some of these subgroups where they're just not connected for some reason with the school, but the counselors or the principals or teachers have seen sparks of leadership ability in them, and just getting it focused in the right direction at sometimes helps. And they have they went to a camp this summer for a week at Elizabethtown College. It was run by the Masonic Village, and they came back and they're pushing into the homerooms and trying to be student leaders, and teachers are also becoming mentors for some of these students. So we're trying a lot of different things to work specifically on the economically disadvantaged. Dropout rate can be directly affected by people feeling like they're part of our community. And so that's another piece that the high school's bringing in to try and work on the issues they found since we got our PSSA results.
So we're in warning this year, and then if we meet it next year, we're out of warning.
Yes.
But if we don't meet it again next year at any level at all, we're in warning, or what's the next step?
School improvement one. And that would mean that we would have to write a getting results proposal for the state to tell them what we're going to do to improve.
Which Nadine and Linda have already had our principals write last year using the same method. So we're already using the plans that we'll have to submit, should we need to submit them next year. We've been using them for a year already. Because the plan makes sense. I mean, what the state is telling you to do is what we want to do. So
right.
Exercising.
At what point does the
state take over?
Yeah.
They're going to have some.
They're going to have all the schools. They're going to take over all the schools.
Yeah.
Which could be even. A lot of people are promised.
Yeah, I am.
Again, that's not promising. There are.
No.
We've got some real issues. I don't want to slug this off as an unfair test or anything. There's real issues. They're addressing the real issues.
There are some districts to school improvement five. So there's time for us to correct before we have a takeover by the state. And with the different ways that we can make AYP, such as Safe Harbor, Growth Model, those kinds of things as well, I feel pretty confident with our plans that are in place that we will be able to do what needs to be done and move forward.
Is this still driven by the federal No Child Left Behind?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
They said that the states have to have their standards to 100% by 2014.
That's what's in No Child Left Behind unless you get a waiver.
Oh, which some states have.
Some states have. Ours has tried many times.
Okay.
And in fact, they've gone back and forth. We've heard now several times just this past year that PSSA was going to stop at these levels. This was going to be it. And now PD hasn't been able to make a deal with DOE yet. So we'll let the acronyms keep talking, and we'll just stand here and wait around.
Do what we do.
Yeah.
Do
what we do. So, thank you.
Mr. Jim.
If I could just make a positive comment. I heard this week from a faculty member at the high school who normally isn't what we would probably consider a glass half full kind. And he said the milieu is palpable. He just couldn't praise the changes that have taken place. He said not only do the other teachers recognize it, but he can see it in the students as well.
Okay.
Any other questions? Evan's a report for the program committee.
Thank you for the thorough report, even if it's not, management committee.
Management, fairly routine items. We've been talking policies now for a while. I am ready to bring the 600 series for a vote of action next week. You've had that now for, it'll be 6 weeks as of next week. Several other policies that we've listed there. The concussion management, cardiac arrest, and the AED CPR policies are all related to new legislation that has come out. And we are already doing those things because we had to. We already have implementation of the practical side of those policies in place. Any questions? Please note that since we have had a first and second read on policies in the 600 series, that policy 610 and 611 had to have some changes. I gave them to you separately, only to update again based on recent code. They came directly from our solicitor, basically updated in some procedures and amounts of money that are noted in those policies. Again, very routine, nothing to concern yourself there with. The second item that I have, any questions on policies? We'll take all of those to action next week. The second item I have is just an informational item at this point. No action required, but I do want some feedback if you feel like giving it to me now or next week or any time thereafter. I've been approached by a teacher who would like to participate in a Fulbright scholarship exchange, meaning that teacher would go to another country and the other country would send someone here for either a semester or a year, depending on what we decided. I think there's a lot of soft benefits to this kind of exchange, and it certainly goes along with the philosophy that we are participating in a global community, et cetera. The way that works in basic terms is we would continue to pay our teacher's salary wherever, whatever country they went to, and the other country would continue to pay the teacher's salary who would come here. The teacher who would come here would be required, would have to speak English, so that wouldn't be a concern. I think the benefits are twofold. We would have someone from another country here and all of the things that can go along with that. And the teacher who we send abroad would come back with some experiences that could be shared with kids. So the reason I'm bringing this to you now is that the teacher who brought it to my attention actually needs to apply now for next year. And so while I prefer to give him the go-ahead to apply, there are some things that we'll need to do in the meantime, such as develop some policies on, okay, what happens if I get 12 teachers who want to go on a Fulbright scholarship in 1 year? We've got to put some thing, you know, and we've got to be a little careful about what countries they're going to, et cetera. So I think there's a whole series of protocols that I need to develop. And I would be coming to you with that full development. However, there's a time in this matter in that the teacher needs to get his application ready. So I'm basically saying to you now, I'd like to proceed and allow him to go ahead. And there's still some points where we can eject and not go through with it. At the end of the day, we do have the ability, I as a superintendent have the ability to reject candidates if we don't think they're a good mix. Not that we get to interview them, but we do get to look at paper screens and applications and understand the people pretty well before we say yes. Another question that I need to answer is, can a teacher from another country be granted permission to teach in Pennsylvania at this point? And certification is a real big issue for PDE. I need to make sure that there are mechanisms in place to allow that to happen. I'm assuming there are. Fulbright is a pretty recognized group in terms of teacher exchanges. So there's a lot of things I need to do to bring this to you formally. But I'm excited that we do have a teacher who's interested in doing this. And what it could mean for our school district. So unless I hear any objections, I'm going to tell the teacher to go ahead and proceed with his application. And in the meantime, you can generate questions that you see fit as I start to develop some of the protocols.
Am I understanding if we send a math teacher, we get a math teacher?
Correct. That is correct. Yes, it's an even exchange. And that's one of the things that we want to talk about. Do we want to send math teachers? I don't know. Because math is a keystone exam. It could be that we maybe not, until we see how it goes, we not send teachers related to keystone exam requirement. I don't know. They're kind of some of the things I'm walking around with because of the jeopardy of what happens if the teacher comes and isn't a great teacher. Do we want that not great teacher in some of those key core subject areas? So they're the kinds of questions I'm sort of asking myself and then trying to frame some answers to bring back to you. But that's a good question.
I was just thinking, you know, we don't want to have a spot, even though you get an extra teacher, that now we're short and we have to hire another elementary school teacher because, you know what I'm saying? That's my question.
Even exchange. What we send them, we get. That's a good question. And there's a website that, you know, I'll get to you at some point that answers a lot of questions, you know, basic FAQs. I'm excited about the opportunity. We keep talking global, and we really start putting our money where our mouth is. We really need to start getting some kids overseas once in a while, get some trips together. So I think this is a good step, a good first step.
I know in my junior year, I took German. Our German teacher was gone to my school over in Germany, and then a male teacher came over for German. That was of course, culturally, it was a different insight into what
absolutely. I mean, I will tell you, as a middle school principal years ago, we exchanged with England. Now, that was a safe exchange because the language barrier wasn't there. But there was still a whole lot of learning, a whole lot of learning that went on. We sent kids over for 10 or 12 days, and then they sent kids back to us for 12 days. And I still keep in contact with a couple of those kids, and a couple of those kids still continue to keep contact with their friends across the pond. And that's been 8 years, something like that now, 7, 8 years. So it's got potential, I think. We need to do more. Any other comments? Thank you. Just two announcements. The first is a note of meeting change publicly for the public. Pat, you be the public tonight. And when we're up at Brecknock, typically we're there for a visit on the official board meeting night. Because of a conflict of parent conferences, the board meeting in November will be here. The official board meeting on November 19th will be here, and the committee meeting will take place on November 12th at Brecknock. And that's just a flip of a week. So again, the board meeting in November 12th, the committee of the whole will be at Brecknock, and the official board meeting will be back here on November 19th. The last announcement I have is we do need to have a brief executive session for a legal matter. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. After today's meeting, and are we having an executive before the next meeting?
We'll have an executive. Whether we need the executive meeting prior to the next meeting will be determined tonight.
Yes.
I still have a question on item 3.2, the concussion management policy.
Yes.
I went back and I looked at an email that we got on the 16th of August from the athletic director, and I'm still confused. It looks like, according to PIAA, their sports medicine handbook, that we're supposed to have a physician at wrestling matches. Do we have a physician at wrestling matches?
No, we do not.
I think that leaves us open for litigation if we don't, and I think we should do something about that.
Okay. We can look into that. Yeah, basically we're throwing the dice on that one. Trying to save some money. I wouldn't argue with it. We'll look at what that costs and bring it back to you.
Any other questions or comments? If not, then do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?